Hey, buddy. How's it going?
We're back for another episode.
Yes, we are.
It's going great, by the way.
Good, 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 good.
Yeah. Another day, another couple of dollars.
Yep, yep. So I got you this time versus Ethix.
Yeah.
Seem to be musical chairs over there.
Still repping the werewolf, though.
Yes.
Yes. I'm an Ethix representative, if you will.
Yeah, well, at least you brought a fresh supply of chicky nuggies to feed him while he's in the hole.
Exactly, exactly. I treat others the way I would like to be treated.
Chicky nuggies.
Exactly. If you didn't bring me chicky nuggies, I'd be offended, honestly.
I mean, who doesn't like chicky nuggies?
Chicky nuggies are the best.
Yeah, especially with sweet sour sauce.
Yeah.
No, I know. I think I know what I'm doing for dinner. Oh, man.
Yeah, good.
Do we take fun lately?
Fun. I think you have my life flipped upside down. I don't do a whole lot of fun. I got screwed over at work. Stayed up super late because I thought I was going to have to work the night shift the night after. And then they were like, haha, you actually don't have to work.
Nice. That's always fun when they do shit like that.
Didn't communicate until the very, very last day.
Could be worse.
Could it?
Yes. I went to do a night shift once at work. Trying to remember what it was for. Oh, it was an vacuum oil fill thingy. Okay. And I went and the first night I was scheduled, I showed up. Now, mind you, these are like 14-hour days.
Yeah.
Showed up for my night shift. And that's when I got notified that, oh, they ran into problems getting all their equipment set up. They're not all ready for you yet.
Oh.
I sat at work by myself for 14 hours doing absolutely fucking nothing.
At least you got paid for it.
True, true, true. I got paid for it. But I almost at that point would have rather been like, just stay
home. At home. Yeah. Sleeping, probably.
Yeah, totally screwed up my sleep schedule. And it was like that for like two nights. Two nights in a row.
My goodness. Yeah. That's
one night. Okay. Sure. Two nights? Like, get your shit together, people.
Yeah, come on. 14 hours is a long time to just be sitting there.
Yeah, so I watched movies one night, and then the next night I actually got up and did something. Yeah. I don't remember what I did, but I did something.
Just like anything to pass the time at that point?
Yeah. Oh, that's what it was. I went over to one of the other shops, and I made wiring harnesses for Transformers.
Oh. For funsies.
14 hours.
Well, they had extra harnesses if they needed them.
I made enough harnesses that I ran out of wire to make more harnesses.
Oh, goodness.
Like, that's how many I made. I went through a whole spool. Just like, making them. Just. Well, so they didn't have to make any for a while in that shop.
Yeah, yeah.
I was bored as fuck.
Did they ever question you? Or are they like, what are you doing, man?
No, they knew.
Oh, yeah. Well, at least you found something to occupy your time.
Still sucks.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I work 12-hour shifts, so I know.
And the cleaning lady scared the shit out of me.
Cleaning at night?
Yeah, that's when they come in and do it.
We don't have janitorial staff come in at night at all. They come in during the day.
Typically, that's when you would think they would do it, but where I work, they do it in the evening. They come in after everybody's gone home, there's nobody there, and this little lady just runs around emptying trashes, wiping down shit, like.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as you know they're coming.
Yeah, and when it's the middle of the night, you're probably a little deprived of sleep, and you're wiring harnesses.
But, and I was listening to one of my favorite horror podcasts.
Oh, but not Fearful Thoughts.
No. One of my others.
This was preconception, probably.
No. This was after. I still listen to multiple podcasts. Listen to Scared to Death.
Fucking traitor.
By Dan and Lindsay.
Cool.
Husband and wife duo. telling scary stories back and forth?
Yeah, I don't do podcasts. Ironically.
Huh.
Here I am, literally doing a podcast, but I don't listen to podcasts in my free time. I'm more of a music guy.
I go back and forth. Depends on the day. And so anyways, I was listening to this really scary story. Okay, they said it was really scary. And at the time, you know, it's dark out, and they're talking, I believe it was an episode on shadow people.
Okay, yeah.
That I was listening to. Go figure. You know, yeah. a room not as well lit as this one.
Yeah, we have lights abundant. You can't...
I'm just sitting there making harnesses and stuff, and I got my phone propped up, and kind of like us, they have audio and video, so I'm just watching one of the video ones, and I'm just like, doing my thing, and in the story, they were talking about a power issue or something, the lights flickering or something,
yeah,
and then all the lights went off in the building. Because the cleaning lady saw the lights were on, and she's like, oh, that's not normal. Shut them off.
She was like, no one's in here. I'm not going to check.
Yeah, she didn't see me because I was kind of like around a corner from where the light switch is.
Right.
Scary.
You like turn on your flashlight and go fumble around until you...
No, I said, hey, can you turn the lights back on? I'm trying to work.
You probably scared her too.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure I did.
Yeah.
I'm sure it did.
She was like, what the fuck?
We scared each other that night.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Imagine you're just sitting there listening to shadow people. And
listening to stories about shadow people creeping people out and scaring them. And
Consuela's like, let me jump in on this.
Right. Oh, man. Good stuff.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So with those stories out of the way, I believe we have a...
Alright, so this week, for our random horror fact, we're going to be talking about Puppet Master. Puppet Master has proven to be as dogmatic and relentless as the killer marionettes are at the center of the story. Since its release in 1989, it's gained a cult following with a new release nearly every other year for almost 30 years. Andrew Toulon's puppet gang have been antagonists, protagonists, and anti-heroes throughout the multitude of sequels, each building on the world imagined by the minds at Full Moon Productions. After the puppets begin to attack attendees of a psychic conference in their hotel rooms, it's up to one visiting professor to figure out how to stop them. He must break the Egyptian spell animating them and extinguish their unique powers. The plot may sound simple enough, but the production was incredibly complex, all surrounding the intricate workings of 7 detailed puppets to make some of the most memorable icons the horror genre has ever known. It has the most horror sequels. Beginning with Puppet Master, the film about children's toys going on homicidal killing sprees in a hotel full of retards. I think you're retarded anytime you try to get into that kind of stuff.
Anyways, I agree.
There's 13 sequels, with a grand total of 14 films, including Blade, The Iron Cross, and Puppet Master vs. Demonic Toys. It surpasses Jason's Friday the 13th series and Michael Myers' Halloween series of most sequels. The latest film, Puppet Master, The Widowless Reich, has received favorable reviews, and Charles Band has said there will be more films in the franchise coming soon. While there have been talks of a complete reboot of the original film before, most fans have vocalized their displeasure at the idea and would prefer more sequels. It even inspired some comics and a few video games. Some of the puppets are actually like people doing all the acts, not just marionettes. Aside from the real puppets being used, necessary to operate all the various marionettes under the Puppet Master's control, it was sometimes necessary for actual people to to represent them during key scenes. This was done by hiring dwarf stunt actors, such as Cindy Sorensen. She portrayed Pinhead during many of the scenes where his hands were on display, such as crawling out of the coffin and when he was punching. The Pinhead puppet had to be perched on her shoulders while she wore the same sweater and fingerless gloves as the marionette.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
Cool stuff.
So this is horror Muppets.
Basically. Yes.
That's awesome. And how many different puppets did you say? Eight?
In the original, there was seven.
Seven. Okay, I was close.
But then as the sequels progressed, you got more puppets.
Right, but that's awesome. Seven unique puppets.
Yep.
Blade sometimes theme. Represented by people.
Yes.
That's very interesting.
At each puppet, there was... I'm trying to remember how many variations. I read it. I should have put it in my notes, and I didn't. But I want to say that there was like six or seven replicas of each puppet.
Oh.
Because they had different functions.
Yeah.
There might be more. I might be wrong on that number. I'm just...
That's interesting to use... instead of trying to pack, you know, eight different unique functions into one puppet, which would have been very hard and material extensive, you know,
yeah.
To instead just have multiple of the same puppet and have each of them follow a different function needed for the movie.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Really good movies. They're campy B movies, but they're awesome.
Which, I mean, that's right up your alley.
Oh yeah, definitely.
TV movies.
And so, the horror fact of the week starts off my theme for this episode.
Oh, so we have more puppets to come.
More horrific puppets to come. And great. Children's toys.
Okay, well, I'm...
But first, before we get to mine...
Yeah, I'm nowhere near your ballpark.
I know.
As I'm typically off topic... no, I actually have, a serial killer back in the 1800s. So this is before the 1900s.
Oh, really? I thought it was 1918.
Sometimes.
Like a countdown.
Yeah. Countdown to the end of the world.
The final countdown.
The final countdown.
Oh god.
Yeah, so this is one of the most notorious serial killers of all time, and you might have heard of him. His name is Jack the Ripper.
I was starting to wonder if that's where you were going.
Yep, his name is Jack the Ripper. Yeah, one of the most known serial killers of all time. The Jack the Ripper murders occurred in the East End of London in 1888, and even though Jack the Ripper was also called the Whitechapel Murderer, he was actually only a threat to a small section of the community in a relatively small part of London, but the crimes actually had a huge impact on society. By focusing the attention of the press and the public on the streets and the people of one of London's poorest and most crime-ridden quarters, Jack the Ripper, whoever he may have been, managed to expose the worst parts of Victorian society, and in doing so, he helped create awareness amongst the wealthier citizens of London to the appalling social conditions that had been allowed to develop, largely unchecked, right on the doorstep of the city of London, the wealthiest square mile on earth. Between April 1888 and February 1891, 11 women were murdered on the East End of London, and their names were included in a police file that was officially titled The Whitechapel Murders. Five of those women are believed to be killed by one man who has passed into history under the name of Jack the Ripper, so called from the signature of a taunting letter that was sent to the Central News Office on New Bridge Street in the City of London, during the last week of September 1888. These five women are often referred to as the Canonical Five, victims of Jack the Ripper, and they were murdered over a 9-week period between Friday 31st in August and Friday the 9th of November in 1888. In the early days of the Jack the Ripper police investigation, the consensus amongst the police and the public alike were that the crimes were actually gang-related. On September 7th, 1888, the Weekly Herald, commenting on the police investigation into the Jack the Ripper murders, which at that point were still known as the Whitechapel murders, reported on the murder of Mary Nichols, which had taken place on August 31st, 1888, saying that the officers engaged in the case are pushing their inquiries to the neighborhood as to the doings of certain gangs known to be frequently active in that area. And an opinion is gaining ground amongst them that the murderers are the same who committed the two previous murders near the same spot. It is believed that these gangs who make their appearance during the early hours of the morning are in the habit of extorting these unfortunate women, and when their demands are refused, violence follows. And to avoid their deeds being brought to light, they put away their victims. They have been under the observation of the police, and it is believed that, with the prospect of a reward and a free pardon, some of them might be persuaded to turn in evidence, and some startling revelations might be expected. In early September 1888, the powers that were at Scotland Yard decided that local knowledge was what was needed if the perpetrator of the Whitechapel murders was to be apprehended. Inspector Frederick George Aberline, an officer who had been promoted out of the area the previous December, after 14 years spent patrolling and getting to know the neighborhood and its criminal elements, was drafted back to the district to take overall charge on the ground of the Jack the Ripper police investigation. It was believed that Aberline's local knowledge would prove invaluable in hunting down the killer and bringing him to justice. An important aspect of a murder investigation is looking at a victim's immediate circle and learning who amongst them had a motive and the opportunity to commit the crime. However, since Jack the Ripper was an opportunist killer who most certainly did not know his victims, this would have been of little use to Aberline and his fellow detectives. Since the victims didn't know their killer, and it was impossible to identify their murderer amongst their associates, the Victorian detectives had to fall upon other methods of trying to trace him. High on their list of police investigative methods would have been a thorough knowledge of the local criminals. This is where it was believed Aberline's knowledge could be used. It was all hoped that a little well-applied police persuasion might cause one local gang member to become an informant and hand the murderer to the police. But since Jack the Ripper probably worked alone and likely was not a member of a local crime faction, the line of inquiry was ultimately doomed to failure. One aspect of the police investigation into the Jack the Ripper killings that was radically different from how a murder inquiry might have been managed today is that the police didn't make great use of the press. In fact, there was a certain amount of distrust between the press and police circles. In the early days of the CID, which is the Criminal Investigation Department, Howard Vincent had adopted a policy that the police were under no circumstances to talk to journalists about their cases. He stated that police must not on any account give any information whatever to gentlemen connected with the press, relative to matters within police knowledge, or relative to duties to be performed or orders received, or communicate in any manner, either directly or indirectly, with editors or reporters of newspapers on any matter connected with the police service without express and special authority. The slightest deviation from this rule may have completely frustrated the ends of justice and defeat the endeavor of superior officers to advance their welfare of the public service. Individual merit will be invariably recognized, but officers who without authority give publicly to discoveries tending to produce sensation and alarm show themselves wholly unworthy of their posts. A major fear, and possibly a very reasonable one, was that if the police were to tell journalists about the lines of inquiry that they were following, then the subsequent press reportage may well tip off suspects that the police were onto them. Early in the investigation, police had seen the danger of sensational press reportage when the leather apron scare almost set off an anti-Jewish riot in the East End of London. Thus, the police chose to try and keep journalists at arm length and keep their lines of inquiry from becoming public knowledge. However, and unfortunately for the police, the Ripper crimes generated a huge amount of press coverage, and the public was desperate to pore over every gruesome detail of the case. Starved of news by police, journalists adopted means of obtaining information. They would shadow individual constables or detectives in hope that they would lead them to a suspect or a witness. They would track down and interview witnesses to see if they could get a hint at what stage, if any, the police investigation had reached. And they would even try to bribe officers or loosen their tongues with drinks. Journalists even dressed up as women and set off to the streets of Whitechapel in hopes that they might meet Jack the Ripper in person, and in doing so, gain a sensational scoop for their newsletter. When all else failed, they could always make up stories. Ultimately, the antics of the popular press proved counterproductive to the police investigation into Jack the Ripper murders, since the reporting threw up so many false leads and readings that the already overstretched detectives were stretched almost to the breaking point. Also, stories such as the leather apron scare had ground constables trying to prevent another Ripper outrage by simply keeping public order in the area. Another suspect of intense debate throughout the Jack the Ripper scare was whether a reward should be offered by the authorities to introduce someone to come forward with information that might lead to the killer's apprehension. After the investigation into the death of Mary Nichols, the supervisor of the jury said that if there had been a reward offered by the government after the murder of Martha Tabram, then probably the two late murders would not have been committed. Although the police attracted a huge amount of criticism over their refusal to offer a reward, it was in fact a home office policy rather than a police policy not to offer one. In November 1888, Henry Matthews, the Home Office Secretary, addressed the House of Commons and defended his decision not to offer a reward. He talked about a few other crimes that had happened before 1884, because there were different rewards offered. So in 1883, rewards ranging from 200 euros to 2,000 euros were offered in such cases of murder of police constable Bones and the dynamite explosions on Charles Street. These rewards, like the €10,000 reward for the Phoenix Park murders, were not effective and produced no evidence of any value. In 1884, there was a change in policy because a remarkable case occurred where a conspiracy was formed to effect an explosion on the German embassy, to plant papers upon an innocent person and to accuse him of the crime, so that way the order, they could obtain the reward for the crime that they committed. After that happened, they decided, therefore, in all cases, to abandon the practice of offering rewards, as they have been found by experience to be a hindrance rather than an aid in the detection of crime. These conclusions were announced and acted upon in two important cases in 1884. One was the shocking murder and violation of a little girl at Middlesbrough, and the other was the dynamite outrage at London Bridge, in which case they offered 5,000 euros in a reward, but the whole subject was reconsidered in 1885. And then, also, in 1888, police could only pursue inquiries in the hope that a lucky break might get them to apprehend a criminal, since they could no longer use bribes, rewards. So talking about how unhelpful the prospect of a reward could prove is aptly shown by the report that appeared on the Daily News on October 13th, 1888. The lapse of time diminishes the prospect of the discovery of the Whitechapel murderer. No attempt is made by the police themselves to disguise the fact that all of their arrests had been equally fruitless and had produced in the official minds a feeling of hopelessness. There were hundreds of men about the streets answering the vague description of Jack the Ripper, and they could not arrest everybody. The reward for apprehension of the murderer had one effect. It overwhelmed the police with descriptions of people who they were expected to investigate for the sole reason that they had been noticed to keep rather irregular hours and had taken their meals alone. The public would be exceedingly surprised if they were made aware of some of the extraordinary suggestions received by police from outsiders. In one case, somebody said that the police should carefully watch the police officer who happened to be closest within the radius of the found bodies. On October 20th, 1888, the Illustrated Police News did publish two suspect sketches. However, they were just artist impressions of what an evil and villainous murderer such as Jack the Ripper might have looked like, as opposed to an exact depiction, because they still hadn't caught the guy, and nobody had known exactly what he looked like. One of the more bizarre aspects of the Jack the Ripper case is the number of letters that the police, newspapers, authorities, and notable citizens received from anonymous members of the public, either offering information on the best way to apprehend the killer, or were supposedly coming from the murderer himself. With the passage of over 100 years since the Whitechapel murders, it is hard to put an exact figure on the number of Jack the Ripper letters that were sent by ordinary men and women who found the allure of the murders difficult to resist, and who, egged by the huge amount of publicity being generated by the crimes, developed an irresistible urge to inject themselves into the police investigation, either by offering advice on how the miscreant could be brought to justice, or else taunting the police by claiming to be the killer and telling them where he was going to strike next and what he would do to his next victim. The Illustrated Police News reported that the police had investigated the provenance of over 700 letters. These can, of course, be broken down into letters that were offering suggestions as to how the murderer should be apprehended, or even information that might have been intended to help the police bring the killer to justice. As many as 300 were prank letters that were received. On the 24th of September, the closing day for the inquiries into the death of Annie Chapman, an unknown author sent a letter to Sir Charles Warren, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner. There is nothing that suggests the police took this missive seriously. The significance of this letter, however, is that it was the precursor to hundreds of such letters that would bring the police investigation into the Jack the Ripper murders close to meltdown. The letter bore a London SE postmark and was headed on Her Majesty's service. It read, "Dear Sir, I do wish to give myself up. I am in misery with nightmare. I am the man who committed all of these murders in the last 6 months. I am a whore slaughterer. I have found the woman that I want is Chapman, and I've done what I called slaughtered her, but if anyone comes, I will surrender." The letter had crude illustrations, one showing a coffin and the other showing a knife, both of which were drawn in heavy black ink. Beneath the knife, the letter's author had written, "This is the knife that I've done these murders with. It is a small handle with a large, long blade sharp on both sides." The police, no doubt, were quick to dismiss this letter as, what it undoubtedly was, a hoax, but what they could not have envisioned as they filed this prank missive away was that somewhere in London, another prankster was sitting down to compose another letter, and this letter would not only have huge ramifications on their investigation, but would also give the killer a name that would ensure that the gruesome street theater that the murders were running would continue to do so. It is probable that the unknown author himself didn't realize the impact his missive would have had as he scrawled the now infamous first words of his letter, "Dear Boss," having treated his readers to a barrage of gloating gruesomeness and warning them that he wanted to get to work right away if I get the chance, he gleefully ended his missive with a flourish as he signed it, "Yours truly, Jack the Ripper." He then dropped it into the post and sat back to see whether his Jack the Ripper letter would have been taken seriously. 2 days later, his letter was opened and read by the staff at the Central News Agency, and the legend was truly born. Jack the Ripper's murders suddenly stopped in the fall of 1888, but London citizens continued to demand answers that would not come. Even more than a century later, the ongoing case, which has spawned an industry of books, films, TV series, and historical tours, has been met with a number of hindrances, including lack of evidence, a horde of misinformation and false testimony, and tight regulations by the Scotland Yard. Jack the Ripper has been the topic of news stories for more than 120 years and will likely continue to be for decades to come.
Wow.
All over five murders.
Yeah.
Five murders that they believed to be Jack the Ripper's murders. There were 11 murders in that time.
And never solved.
Ever. And never solved.
Ever, ever, ever.
A lot of this information was pulled from jack-the-ripper.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go on that website, it actually has a lot of information about Jack the Ripper.
Yep.
And all of, I mean, anything you can think of.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of stuff out there. I know in our first season, we did a small little thing on Jack the Ripper.
Okay, well, this was a big...
So you
big
definitely expanded on it and yeah. talked about things that we definitely did not talk about.
Yeah. I thought it would have been a little more interesting to go into the police aspect of everything.
Yeah.
They talk about how just thin they were ran because it was impossible to cover that many letters in that short period of time.
Yeah.
And between, you know, like it talks about people telling them how to do their job, telling them how they should take down Jack the Ripper,
yeah.
to people trying to help but not being clear enough in their letters, and to other people pretending to be the killer himself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's funny that the letter that really sold it, you know, signed "Yours truly, Jack the Ripper," was what did it, was what really kicked it off.
Yeah.
That name, at least. And I didn't include it on here, but I did read a thing. In 2011, there was I believe he was a police officer, who had been investigating the Jack the Ripper murders for quite some time.
Yep.
And he asked the Metropolitan Police for all that they had so that he could further delve in.
Right.
And they actually refused him the service.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Which is insane to me. At this point, what does it matter?
Right, yeah.
And if I remember correctly, the reason they stated for not doing it was because it had sensitive information about the people that were originally on the case.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that. We talked about that a little bit in our
excerpt.
In the earlier yeah. episode, yeah.
But
still, yeah, I had the same thought when I saw that, too, is that...
Like, with how long ago they happened.
These people are long dead. Any relatives of theirs that are... or descendants that are alive...
Yeah.
Aren't going to care that much.
I don't think they care honestly.
This far back, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there'll still be some that would care.
But also...
But not, like...
At the same time, a part of me is like, what's the point in having that information anyway because it happened so long ago? I mean, there's little to no way at this point for you to really investigate very far into it.
Right.
Because none of the people are around
you. Yeah, so it's not like you can go make an arrest or anything.
Yeah, like who are you going to arrest?
But the only thing is, though, you know, to finally solve that mystery, that murder. I mean,
yeah.
that's iconic.
Yeah.
I mean...
A killer that was never shown.
You would go down in history as the guy who solved the Jack the Ripper murder.
Yeah,
you
know, it's true.
You would.
Yeah.
If that was you. And so there's a lot of intrigue, like, about that. You know, just like all these, like, cryptid hunters and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
If you actually got one, trapped one, you're going down in history.
Yeah, absolutely.
As long as they can prove that it's not faked. Like the guy who had a Bigfoot in his freezer.
Yeah.
It was all faked.
Right.
But, you know, if you could really truly do that, or even an alien, or anything of that nature, you're going down in history.
Yeah.
And you will forever be remembered in whatever the community is, whether it's a true crime or cryptids or whatever, because everybody's got their own little niche. You would be forever remembered.
It's cases like this, like the Jack the Ripper murders and stuff, things that happened before, you know, like the 1990s, where they really started, like, getting into being able to trace things better.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just crazy to me that this guy wouldn't have made it past one, probably.
One, maybe two these days. I mean,
yeah, depending on where.
Yeah. If he's in a big city, he might be able to get away with two.
Well, and they were it interested me a lot that they started, like, at the very beginning, they were like, well, this is a gang crime.
Yeah.
It's gang crime. It's just a gang member, you know.
Just getting initiated in or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so funny to me how, like, willing they were to accept those kind of things. Like, there's like, well, she was a prostitute, so she got what she deserved. All right, case closed. What's for lunch?
Yeah.
You know, that's just kind of what I picture. I'm sure that's not how it happened, but I mean,
not that accurate, but but the thing is, really, like, back when this was happening, women didn't have as many rights.
Unfortunately,
And, I mean, really, even if that's not something they were thinking in the forefront, that was probably in the back of their mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Or at least, like, one of the guys holding the crowds back or something's just sitting there thinking his head, it was just a prostitute.
Why does anybody care?
Let's just fucking move along here.
Yeah, why does anybody
care? My lunch is getting cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. It does.
The lunch that my wife made me.
Yeah. I made her slave over a hot stove to make it for me.
Yeah. She's a stay-at-home mom while I'm here doing police work. But yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Really is. That's awesome. Good stuff. Are you ready for some more, like, paranormal?
Yeah, puppets.
We're kind of... There's puppets, and then there's a toy that we're going to talk about as well.
Does it also include fingers?
It has fingers. It takes fingers to operate.
Okay.
I mean...
So it's almost like a puppet toy.
Kind of.
Okay.
Kind of.
I'm interested.
Once you hear about this, though, you might not ever buy one.
I don't see myself buying puppets.
Our listeners might not ever buy one.
Okay.
How's that? You know, this is a kid's toy. A little kid's toy. So,
all right.
Well, let's get right into it. Still got those. No. We're going to be talking about the origin of the Jack in the Box. The Jack in the Box dates back to the 14th century, and a man named Sir John Schroen, he lived in Buckinghamshire, England, and was a great leader and healer in his small village. Folklore says he captured a devil in a box, in a boot, and he is often pictured holding the boot with the devil popping out of it. This is the origin of the tenacious children's toy. First of all, creepy. No matter how much you expect the Jack in the Box to pop out, the anticipation of waiting for it to pop out just kind of, like, gets you every time if you're not paying attention.
Every time.
But perhaps because the Jack is actually a symbol of the devil, that might be the creepiest part. Led me to another line of thinking, though. One of the most prevalent and violently phobic fears amongst us mere mortals is that of clowns. I've always wondered, what is it about them that scares us so much? Well, don't get me wrong. I really do think they're creepy as fuck. Where they're painted on fake smiles and all that kind of shit, you know. But what is it that makes them that way for so many others to be afraid of clowns? I always figured it must have something to do with the fact that they wear their masks, their false happiness that just freaks us out. But I think there's a darker connection here. The jack is a symbol of the devil named Jack. In much the same way the jack-o'-lanterns of Halloween are. And somewhere, they got crossed with Clown War, which suggests that the clown is also a symbol of the devil. Could this be why such a large portion of the population suffers from a phobia of them? I can't even pronounce the phobia. Sorry, people. Research shows that when human features look and move almost, but not exactly like natural human beings, it causes a response of revulsion among some human observers. And classically, this is exactly what the devil does. He tries hard to mimic human or godlike behavior, but can't ever quite pull it off. Perhaps this is why we are so unsettled by clowns and the Jack in the Box in particular. I'd venture to say that perhaps our revulsion is not animalistic or juvenile, as so many of us have always believed. Perhaps it's something more, a sense that is spiritual. Of course, this wouldn't always hold true. Clowns from Shakespearean times were court gestures and often associated with wisdom. But that's not exactly what we're talking about here. So in this group, they were significantly freaked out by the history of the Jack in the Box. And the more I thought about it, the more interesting it became to me. Besides the devil living in a boot during the Middle Ages, would make excellent historical fiction fodder, right? Oh, and a little creeped out by the Pop the Goes the Weasel tune, which often accompanies the Jack in the Box. You know, the lyrics, all around the mulberry bush, the monkey chased the weasel. The monkey thought it was all in good fun. Pop goes the weasel. If we assume the monkey is the Jack, and the weasel is a human child, it becomes a little more creepy.
Yeah, I would agree.
What do you think about that? A little Jack in the Box creeper?
So, rewinding a little bit.
And there's definitely a lot more to this. Again, as with most of my stories, I condense them down and parts do get left out. But at one point in time, so it went from he had the devil in a boot to eventually he did form a box. And the box was a form of holding a devil.
A devil, not the devil?
A devil.
A devil. Yes. Why is the devil named Jack?
Actually, it should be demon, not devil, but...
Right. I would think so, too. Well, back in ancient times, I feel like calling something a devil was kind of... That's what you do.
Generic term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that makes sense. Because they called witches and stuff devils as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know... Cornered at the stake or whatever. But no, the name Jack in relation to like a demon or a why Jack of all things?
I don't know.
Do you think demons pick their name or is Satan just like, no, you are...
You look like a Jack.
He picks the name you hate the most.
Right. He's like, what's your least favorite name? I'm going to torture you forever by changing your name to it. So.
Yeah.
This guy's like, God, I really fucking hate the name Jack. Jack it is!
From now on, you shall be known as Jack.
And I'm going to put you in a box.
Yeah, a boot first.
Das Boot.
You must first become akin to living in a boot, and then you might be upgraded to a box.
A luxury box. That has this annoying tune that plays every time somebody tries to open it.
Imagine he's just as, like, disgusted by that tune, and the only reason he pops out is he's trying to get out, but he's connected by the spring.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, damn it.
That's as far as I can get.
Yeah. So So.
And they always put me back in the box.
Slammed the lid on my head. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So, you know, Jack the Box is also known as Devil in a Box.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
So.
I've never heard them called that.
Yeah.
Have you ever owned a Jack in the Box?
When I was a kid, yeah. Not any time recently. Like, my kids have never had them.
We tried to build
them. I've always thought they were kind of creepy.
Yeah.
So.
They're a little weird.
Which does explain, you know, going into the war and stuff of it. It does explain that creepiness. Why, you know, for me.
So what do you think it looked like before it was a clown?
I thought there were some pictures on there, but maybe I didn't get pictures up there of the clown.
I saw some pictures of, like, some demonic looking, like, clown face boyos.
So there's that guy.
Yeah. He kind of looks zombie-ish to me.
It was hard because a lot of them were like children's toys, so I was trying to find some more creepier looking ones.
Yeah.
Obviously, like that guy. He's kind of creepy to me. His big fake ass fucking smile. That one is from Demonic Toys.
Okay.
Which is Full Moon Productions, which ties into Puppet Master.
That's why that's there.
That
one's more of a jester.
I don't remember what that one's from. Or that one. Yeah, so these are just different incarnations of the Devil in a Box.
Yeah.
You know, obviously that's just somebody's drawing.
That looks like an ICP guy.
Yeah, kind of does. Boy, I'm not seeing... Interesting. It kind of rolled through the pictures, but I'm not seeing the one I was looking for.
So we might have missed the picture. That's what you're telling me. Might have missed the picture you were looking for.
Yeah, the picture I'm looking for was a still taken from a movie called Jack in the Box.
Jack in the Box. There's a movie called
Jack in the Box. It's a horror movie called Jack in the Box. There's two of them. Jack in the Box and Jack in the Box: The Awakening.
Oh, that didn't go with the the typical naming convention. They didn't just go Jack in the Box, and this one shall be called Jack in the Box 2.
No. Yeah. Jack in the Box 1, really good. I loved it.
Yeah.
And the demon that comes out of it obviously looks like the Jack in the Box guy.
Yeah.
When the box first gets popped, it looks more like a more whimsical kind of like guy attached to the spring and stuff.
Yeah.
But then when people are looking and the demon comes out of the box, he's much more sinister looking. And he's like fucking 7 foot tall.
That's awesome.
He's a tall fucker.
Yeah.
Like,
I think the looming is like, it really adds a terror.
And then the idea is on top of the box, there's a timer or a countdown almost. It rotates. Okay.
That's interesting.
And then there's little block letters that goes to, like, zero. But then when you, like, wind it up and it goes Pop Goes the Weasel, all that, then the blocks rotate and it spells out Jack.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But anyways, there's this ring. I guess, sorry, spoiler alert for anybody who has not seen the movie. You should still check it out regardless.
Definitely spoiling it for me.
Yeah, we're still going to watch it, though. It's on our list.
Yeah, well, it sounds great. It sounds very interesting.
It rotates every time you kill somebody.
Oh.
So the countdown, or the timer, I guess it's not a countdown timer, but the timer starts at zero, and each time you kill somebody, it goes up a number till it reaches...
666?
5 or 6. And... once he's had that many, because each death gives him 5 years
to live, to basically live.
So basically, he kills you, he gets to live for another 5 years, right?
Right, but is it like the box and like everything perishes,
him. Or it like feeds him?
Okay,
basically, it's like his food source, so he can live off of you for 5 years.
Wow, imagine taking somebody
and so
like 60 years.
The box
of life.
Has to be opened up every 30 years. Basically
has to be
I think 5 10 years. 15 20 25 25 years 20 25 years something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
It can be open more often than not, but you know,
has to be at least that
because his food source will last him that long,
right? Okay. Interesting. I totally have the name for number 3, by the way.
And you can in the second one, reason with him.
Oh, you make a deal with the devil.
Yes, you make a deal with the devil in the box.
Okay.
And this, like, an 80-year-old, probably not 80, I think she's more like 50-year-old lady, who's got, like, a disease and she's dying.
Yeah.
Searches the world for this box.
Just so she can make a deal?
Gets it, and she makes a deal with the devil that she will feed him 5 people or 6 people, whatever the number is. And in return, he will take away the disease that's killing him.
Oh, interesting.
And so then each time somebody gets killed, she gets better.
Oh, that's a really cool premise, though.
Yeah.
I like that.
Really cool. And it plays a part on... so they are directly connected, the first movie and second movie. You know, sometimes they aren't.
Yeah.
In sequels, well, you know.
More times than not.
But it ties back to the first one and how, like, at the... After all the deaths from the first movie, there was an investigation and this guy was arrested for these murders. And so he's just kind of lived his life
in prison.
In solitude afterwards. Just after he did his time.
Oh, he's like, out. He's like, fuck this shit, dude. Yeah. I'm not even.
He just, yeah. And so then somebody finds him and, like, goes and talks to him. Like, and like, he's, hey, like,
we need to stop this thing.
You need to fucking. You gotta get away from that place. You gotta fucking...
Yeah, because he's like, oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Number 3, by the way. Jack in the Box, you don't know Jack.
Or why? Jack's not going back in the box.
He's sick of the box.
Yeah.
He wants out of the box, man. Would you want to be in a box for 30 years?
No. No, 20, 25, 30 box years? At all.
Yeah, right?
So, I mean, yeah, I don't blame him.
It's like being shoved in a shipping, like a cat carrier or something.
Yeah, basically.
Suck
he's,
ass.
He's like a Pokemon. He's a devil Pokemon. He's just like, get ready to battle you, somebody. Jack. I choose Jack. Set him down. Any minute now, he's coming.
You don't get an attack yet. My turn's not done.
Just wait. This is it goes off and scares you too. You're like, oh, jeez. All right.
The fuck.
Yeah, go to work.
Don't do that again. Yeah.
Oh, good. Man. Yeah.
Devil in a box.
Yes, devil in a box.
I like that. I like that because, so, you know, as you know, I'm a realist guy. I like the realism. I like ties to real life.
Yes.
And that's a tie to a real life thing. The Jack in the Box is a thing.
It's a real thing. It's not fictional.
It is a real thing.
And you trace back the origins of it, and this is where it goes to.
Yeah, which is really weird. Really weird. It's kind of like on the episode that I talked about the nightmare. You know, nightmares happen in all sorts of different languages, different cultures.
Right, yeah.
And they came up with different reasons why those things happened.
Yes.
And it's the same thing, but, like, I wonder what... You know, because you can't see back to see what really happened.
Right, yeah. But,
like, this could have just been made, like, a story that somebody made up to sell the toy or whatever. But, like, I want to know what really happened.
Exactly.
There's no way to do that
right.
anymore.
No, not until we Marty McFly this shit.
Yeah.
Fucking get ourselves a DeLorean.
On the magic school bus.
So I got one more for you.
All right.
Yes, one more. I'm just double checking.
Yeah.
This one's a little bit creepier.
Sure.
I think.
Going back into puppets.
Yes.
Yay.
Kind of. We're gonna be talking about Letta Me Out, the haunted doll. I'll fix that later. For those of you who are just curious, my pictures are not popping up like they're supposed to. For those of you, our techie tech guy's gonna try to fix that while I go on. Letta Me Out is well known amongst the paranormal community as being one of the most haunted dolls in the world. The doll, which currently resides in Australia, is surrounded by quite a bit of mystery. While the doll sports exaggerated facial features, giving it a wicked look that is off-putting to many. This haunted doll may not be as bad as its evil appearance suggests. Letta's origins. Letta's story can be traced to the small town of Wagga Wagga in rural New South Wales, Australia. It was here during the 1970s that a young man by the name of Kerry Walton decided to explore an abandoned house with his brother. The two men had always been inquisitive over the property, having heard countless stories of it being a haunted house as kids. It was within this house that Kerry was to make a shocking discovery. Underneath the floors of the decaying property, he spotted something with a sinister look, which at first glance to the boy looked like a dead child. Upon closer inspection, Kerry had discovered it was a strange doll with a wicked grin. Kerry felt compelled to rescue the doll from beneath the house. It was on the long drive home to Brisbane that the two brothers were to dub the doll Letta Meowt. After making jokes that the doll appeared to be moving within the sack he was being transported inside of, Letta Meowt doll moving. Letta Meowt, a doll known to move by itself. Kerry's family were understandably apprehensive towards the doll when he first brought it home. Yet it was the strange activity to follow that really had them unsettled. It is said that the Letta Meowt doll would move around on its own accord, with strange scuff marks apparently left from the doll's shoes were found all around the house each morning. In addition, some people had an aversion to the doll's presence, feeling sick, faint, or overcome by emotion when the doll was around. Animals, namely dogs, would act strangely around the dog too, trying to bite and attack it. Because there are so many strange occurrences that happened surrounding the Letta Meowt doll, the new owners became curious as to what they could learn about the mysterious children's toy. To their surprise, experts were able to date the doll at around 200 years old by analyzing some of the nails held under the doll's feet. It was so speculated that the doll had even been handcrafted somewhere in Eastern Europe, likely in Romania, judging by the doll's gypsy-like appearance. Interestingly, the doll even has a full head of human hair. In addition, the doll was also taken to a psychic for analysis. The psychic came up with some compelling information which had been reiterated by other psychics throughout the years. It is said that the doll is actually inhabited by the spirit of a young boy who died a long time ago from drowning. It is also speculated that the doll may have been created in the boy's likeness. Kerry was even allegedly told that he would never be separated from the doll. This was put to the test when the opportunity to sell Letta Meowt arose, yet Kerry just couldn't bring himself to part with the doll. Today, Letta Meowt has become an integral part of the Kerry's family. Though this haunted doll appears to look a little creepy, its sad backstory means that the doll may just be inhabited by an innocent child spirit. The doll is believed to be good-natured and even bring good luck to those who come into contact with it. Kerry tours and does occasional public appearances with Letta, where fans of the doll are able to meet and have their photo taken with one of the world's most haunted dolls. I have found the best way to keep up to date with the doll's activities and appearances via Letta's Facebook page. And an added bonus of following Letta Meowt on social media is that all posts are written by the doll in the first person.
Alright. Interesting.
Yeah. You know, I mean, everybody's heard of Annabelle and Robert, the doll.
Uh-huh.
And so I was very intrigued to find this one. Not as evil and sadistic as, say, Annabelle or Robert, But it's still...
If nothing else, it's almost more interesting that it's... It's
haunted, but it's not evil.
It's not evil, yeah. And every time you say, oh, this thing is haunted, you don't think, oh, it's going to bring me good luck.
Right,
you think
yeah,
it's
yeah.
going to kill
yeah.
my family member definitely. Or crash my car or something. Like
yeah, that. Definitely, definitely.
Weird that they could see it, like, writhing in the bag.
Right. Like, it was moving around in the bag in the back seat, and they're like, man.
And it doesn't appear, like, from that story, that set of information, it doesn't appear that it can talk. It just seems like it just sort of, it moves.
It just moves.
But it just kind of hangs out.
Just exists.
It doesn't, like...
Yeah. It doesn't do a whole lot of, like...
It's not trying to hurt you or anything. It's just like...
And some of the other stuff I was reading is mischievous at times.
As a child is, though.
Basically, yeah. And so it's very interesting. And the fact that this guy tours with the doll. Mm-hmm. So other people can experience the doll and see the doll and, you know.
Maybe have its good luck. Because supposedly, you know, if you come in contact with the thing.
It is very interesting, kind of creepy aspect these days to think that the doll has a full head of actual human hair.
Yeah.
But, back in the day, they used what they had when they made dolls. You know?
Well,
or it could be the child's hair that drowned.
That's what I was going
to say. And that's how he inhabits the doll.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say. Is like, I wonder if it's... Because we don't know the origin of the doll.
Correct.
It was just found under some floorboards in a house.
And it's dated 200 years prior to that.
Yeah. And
so, I mean, it's an old doll.
The fact that, you know, they say that it's a little boy's spirit. I mean, who knows? Maybe the little boy was killed and they used his hair on the thing and then... He was just like, drawn to that object because it had a part
of him.
Pieces of him. Which, you know, makes it a little more, makes his backstory a little more creepy, but, but like a kid, you know, is going to have less motivation to be malicious.
Right. And generally speaking, and actually, sorry, for those of you listening and watching, I'm sorry. We have a foster dog in our house, and he is being very vocal right now. So if you hear barking going on, sorry, guys.
Yeah. I've been ignoring it.
I've been trying to ignore it as much as I can.
Yeah.
But I'm looking up at our monitor, and I'm seeing that the mic is catching it. So listeners are probably going to hear some of that. So I just wanted to address that.
We're
going to
try our best in editing to make sure that that's... That's not prominent.
As noticeable.
But,
sorry. You know,
there's only so much we can do about the audio track, so.
Yeah. I forgot where I was going with that.
You said generally speaking.
Oh, generally speaking. Kids in general have no idea of.
Sort of like evil. Right and wrong.
They have an idea of what's right and wrong, but
only
not,
what you tell
not,
them.
They're not inherently evil by nature, I guess. They're curious.
I feel like their values of right and wrong really come from what they're around and what people tell them are right and wrong. Because we don't have an age on this boy that inhabits.
Yeah.
We know that it is a child, but if it was, you know,
it could be a young child, like 5 or 6.
It could be like a teenager, like something like that. You know, who knows? Honestly.
Yeah. Right.
A kid.
Right.
Know?
But I tend to think that it's probably a younger child.
It interests me that they specifically said it was a boy, though.
Yeah.
How do you...
Well, psychics. You know, that's just part of the whole psychic thing.
I have many doubts in psychics.
I know you do. I do, too. I've never seen one in person.
I kind of want to, though.
I do.
And I want to debunk the shit out of it.
I really want to. I really want to go in and I want to go see a psychic. I do. Because I either, A, want to find out that they're not full of shit.
I want to do it for all the wrong reasons.
Or, B, find out that they are full of shit and we can debunk it.
That's me. I want to...
And so I'm kind of like in the middle of that road. Like, I know you're over here.
I want to stonewall them.
And I'm in the middle because I'm like, well, you just never know. I mean, it's so hard to explain away everything.
It's exhausting because
because you know, those that are clairvoyant, I mean, I feel like the ones who definitely expose it, you know, use it for financial gain.
Yeah.
And make a shit ton of money off of it.
See, that's what worries me.
Those are the ones that I feel are frauds.
So you want to go to one that's going to do this for free?
I want to try to find one that's at least not going to rape us, money-wise.
I rape you in other ways. Compensation.
Most action I've had in a while. I'll take it.
Married life. Hashtag married life.
Yeah. I don't know. I want to believe. I'm very skeptical, but I want to believe.
I know.
You know?
I don't. I don't want to.
For me, there's just been too many occurrences.
Yeah.
In my life that I've came across things where I'm like, it doesn't make sense.
See, and we've had this conversation. And I know we've
talked about it. I mean, like, one big one that really happened to me, oh, about 13 years ago, 14 years ago. I was driving to work. Wintertime.
Yeah. It sucks.
Towards the tail end of winter, almost spring.
Okay.
So you get some sunny days, but still get cold.
Is it snow on the ground?
No snow on the ground.
Okay.
But we had a really cold snap. Hmm. And so there was black ice.
Great.
I had never hit black ice before in my life. I mean, I grew up in this area, driving the roads all the time. I've never...
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I'm driving... And I got so far, and I had to turn around, come back home, get my tools, because I forgot them.
Great.
So I did that, and then I'm leaving again. Now I'm late for work, so I'm a little, like, God, I need to get there. But I'm not speeding. I'm actually doing under the speed limit.
Being a good citizen.
You know, which is taking a lot of effort, because right. I'm late for work, but I'm like...
It's in caution of the circumstances.
I'm eating my breakfast on the go.
As you do, yeah.
And I'm... heading down the road, and I'm in my lane. Next thing I know, I'm over here. There was no, like, it was just like, bonk. Like somebody just... like, yeah. This is my truck. Somebody went, beep. Like, that's just like that. And so, I immediately let my foot up off the gas. Never touched my brake. Not once, because that's the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
Let my foot up off the gas. And I just slowly corrected over to get back in my lane.
Which is what you're supposed to do.
Correct. I hit more ice. So then as I was slowly correcting, I went whee! Down into a ditch, hit a couple rocks, rolled the truck.
Yeah.
And when I came to a stop, the cab of the truck was the height of the dash.
Which is insane.
And I was laying on my side.
Right.
I did have my seatbelt on.
Great.
Firm believer of seatbelts.
Yeah. Well, especially after something like that, I feel like you'd probably be more of an advocate.
And you know, and it probably could be explained away through physics and all of that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I just believe somebody was really watching out for me that day. Because when I came to a stop, the cab was...
See, this is interesting.
The cab was smushed, right?
Yeah.
I had my tool bag on the floorboard of my truck. Mm-hmm. My screwdriver was through the back, right where my head would have been.
It's interesting, too, that you say that somebody had to be watching out for you, because this is usually when people are like, oh, what'd you do? And I know that you're not the religious type, so it's kind of
interesting. It just, that's the feeling I got from it. And I still get from that, because I look back at it, and I look at that, and all I had was a bruise from the seatbelt. That's it. No glass shards hit me in the head, no nothing else, just a bruise. And I'm like, you hear people getting in accidents and walking out like that because they're drunk.
Somehow. Yeah, why does that happen?
Because you're so relaxed when you're drunk.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
There's
more to it than that.
I never really looked into it.
Kind of simplification of it.
Okay, that's interesting.
But I was not. I was completely sober. I was heading to work.
Yeah.
And I saw it happening, so I was definitely tense. So that's why I was like, somebody was looking out for me.
Yeah.
To not get hurt worse than I did.
Maybe it was letting me out.
Little good luck doll.
Yeah.
I don't know. But like I said, that screwdriver was in the back, and it went through the steel. So like the front of the cab is like at the dash height, and then kind of hinged up. Mm. And back here where my head was is where the screwdriver went through. And so at any point, that screwdriver could have went through my head.
Yeah, and that probably would have caused death, if not a little bit of vegetabling.
Yes.
Which,
and I wouldn't be here today.
Nobody wants that.
You know, that's kind of...
That's almost, in my opinion, I don't know about everybody else out there, you know, you guys might have different opinions, but that's almost worse than dying. I feel like it is worse than dying, not almost. Becoming a vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, being living, but not being able to live.
Yeah, you're not really living at that point. You're just existing.
You can't go out and do anything.
You kept alive for your family. That's it.
It can hinder everything from your movement to your speech to your breathing.
If you go to the full end of the spectrum vegetable, where you're on life support...
You're basically in a coma. You can't move, can't use the restroom on your own. Yeah.
Aware of your surroundings, but can't do shit.
Can't use the restroom on your own.
Can't feed yourself.
Like, all of those favorite foods, those favorite drinks you have...
Gone.
The people that you love to have conversations with, gone. There's none of that anymore. Yeah. You might be able to... through physical therapy and stuff like that, people can get like a little bit of movement back.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only
if your brain is functional enough.
Yeah, yeah.
If your brain isn't functional enough to comprehend movements or however that works, I don't 100% understand well.
We're not doctors.
Yeah, no, no.
We're not scientists. No.
But, you know, just that right there, you know, that event alone.
Yeah.
There's something there.
And the crazy thing, too.
Not really just by any means, but.
Yeah, yeah.
Something. Something was like, no, it's not your time.
I know that you're not, you know, religious and stuff, but there's other things outside of religion that could save a person's life. I mean, people that believe in, you know, the spirits of your ancestors and stuff like that.
Yes.
Like, it could have been a fallen family member that you. Mm-hmm. That, you know, saw it just happened to be looking out for you that day. And
yeah, then that's more what I mean when I say, you know, somebody was looking out for me or something.
Yeah.
Was because
yeah,
it could be anything like that,
really, honestly.
Yeah,
but yeah. I was
super lucky.
I did actually know about the car crash, the truck crash, I guess. We had talked about it before. I don't think it was ever brought up that it was black ice that you slipped on. But I remember being told about the cab being crushed, and the screwdriver thing was one that you brought up also.
It's a detail you'd never forget.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I get out. I was eating breakfast. My breakfast was a cherry Pop-Tart.
Yeah, no more cherry Pop-Tart.
I still eat them. I love them.
Well, no. I meant that day.
Yeah, yeah.
It was probably gone.
That day. I think I went home and I heated up and ate another one. I don't know. I don't remember. But thankfully, somebody who's behind me stopped. They kicked out the window so I could get out. It was an older truck, but I converted it to electric windows.
Ah.
And everything stopped working, so I couldn't roll the windows down or anything.
Yeah.
So I'm just like trying to kick the window out. And just the way I was positioned in there, I really
made it really hard.
Couldn't. Yeah. And so this bystander came and he's like, you know, cover yourself, get away from the window, bust out the window, got me out. But, anyways. From eating the cherry Pop-Tart and then getting in the accident when that happened, I had cherry Pop-Tart, like, all over my face. The cop that got there freaked out because he thought it was blood.
He's like, oh my god, are you okay?
He's like, you need to sit down and rest. I'm like, because I'm wandering around, I'm picking up all my stuff that fell out of the truck.
Yeah. Yeah, just trying to recount as much stuff as you can.
Well, and the guy's like, the officer was like, no, the people that come out here and clean up, they do that. They'll take care of that. I was like, no, I got to clean up my stuff. I'm not a litter bug. Like, that was kind of like on my mind. Well, yeah, I already knew the truck was gone, so I'm like, but I'm like trying to pick up my stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And I sat down, and like I said, yeah, he was freaking out because it looked like I was all bloodied up, but it was just Pop-Tart, and I just like wiped it off. I was like, no, it's my breakfast, man.
You're like, it's not mine, it's fine.
Yeah, it's like, it's not my blood. As soon as I said it was my breakfast, he was like, what the hell were you eating?
Yeah.
Just a little orphan baby.
Yeah. Light snack before.
Yeah. You know, they taste great, you know, seasoned salt.
Did you end up going to work?
No.
Or were you just like, no, that's enough exciting?
I was off for a couple days after that, actually.
Was that of your job choice or your choice?
Both. We talked about it and
came to a decision.
You know, probably going to be best to be off for a couple days. We're going to want to go to the doctor, get checked out.
Make sure that truly, you know, nothing is
wrong,
because internal stuff can happen and sometimes you never know.
Yeah, and sometimes it takes a couple days, you know.
So. Yeah. But yeah, we're, you know, me, the fans and everyone, I'm sure we're all glad to have you around.
Me too.
Because that could have been...
That could have been so much worse.
Yeah, could have been. But, you know, here we are.
Telling spooky stories about...
All sorts of shit.
All kinds of stuff. Some haunted dolls.
Yeah.
Some devils in a box.
Yep.
It is...
Possibly a devil on Earth. I mean...
Jack the Ripper.
Who knows?
Ooh.
Who knows who or whom they could have been?
I mean, just had a thought.
Yeah.
It just kind of... Throw it out there. What if Jack the Ripper was a Jack the Box?
Could be.
I mean, could be. How many people did he kill? Five? Six?
Five.
Five?
Five that were believed to be his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
it kind of does.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I never thought about that till just now.
The cool thing too, right? Jack the Ripper. We don't even know if he wrote the letter that coined the name Jack the Ripper.
We don't.
That could have just been, like, that could have been anything. But the thing is, the weird thing that I thought, at least, right? So there's the letter beforehand that's sent that, you know, just...
Describes.
Describes, like, you know...
Yeah.
What he's going to do and stuff. And then this letter comes out that says Jack the Ripper. And from then on, it's... Nobody fought it.
Yeah, nobody fought it. They were just like, that's one hell of a good name.
That's his name.
That's
got to
name.
Be his name.
That has to be.
And, you know, before he's the, what is it, like, white...
Would have been hilarious if they'd, like, actually caught the guy and his name was, like, Bert. And they're like, we caught Jack the Ripper! His identity is... Bert.
Bert Longshot.
And then everybody's like, what? No, his name's got to be Jack.
Bert the Ripper. I think Bert rips his farts, dude.
So,
sounds like a 60-year-old middle-aged, you know, like, man that just sits in his home. He's collecting disability.
Yeah.
And he's like flipping through the channels. Yeah, it's the 1800s. He's flipping the radio channels.
Man, they didn't even have radio.
They didn't have radio back then?
Oh, no, not in the 1800s, no.
He's sitting there.
He'd been looking out his window, looking at all the people passing by. Looking at the prostitutes.
Fucking hate this town.
Looking at all the prostitutes having fun.
Oh, she's killable.
Like, huh. she's killable.
You kind of figure out...
I could get her up to my room and kill her.
I wonder, too, because a lot of the suspicion came from people, like, that they saw regularly in the area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you see somebody pass by every night at
the same time,
midnight or whatever, because all the murders happened really late at night.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the same guy pass by every day at midnight. And that's sort of like who they were looking into were the people that had later times that would be out in those areas. But like me as a killer, if I'm going to commit murder, it's going to be nowhere near my home.
Right, yeah, why would you do it near your home?
It's not going to be near my home. It's not going to be near anywhere that I come regularly. Like,
yeah.
I
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like,
God, what's that killer's name? There's a killer who was like that. He traveled across several states. I think Ramirez, known as the Night Stalker. I could be wrong. But I want to say he...
You have more knowledge than me.
I want to say he killed people in different... down this stretch of highway.
And that's the way I'd be doing
it. And he would, yeah, just... killing people off as he was going to wherever he was heading.
And that's what I'd be doing, man.
He got caught. And he went to jail. And,
yeah. More recent.
Prison. 80s. 70s, 80s. Somewhere in there.
Much closer than 1800s.
Yes. But I'm just saying, I mean, that's what he did until he was caught. Because all serial killers fuck up in one form or another at some point in their killing spree.
Except for Jack the Ripper, apparently.
That's why I'm saying he's a Jack in the Box.
He just went back to the box.
The name fits.
Yeah.
Jack in the Box, Jack the Ripper.
Come up with your own theories in the comment section. We'd love to hear
them. I would love to hear other people's theories, but that's the one that I just now came up with.
And it's great.
It sounded pretty sound.
I mean,
so beware.
Down to the name and everything. Beware of people named Jack. That's the moral of the story.
I was going to say beware of Jack in the Boxes.
just don't be friends with anybody named Jack.
Don't have a devil in the box.
And if you're named Jack, let it be known in the comments so everybody knows to stay away from
you. And let us know whether you would or wouldn't kill us.
Also, let us know if you live in a boot or a box.
Box, preferably a box these days, I would think. Because a house is a box.
But there was the lady that lived in the chute.
I feel like that's kind of unreasonable these days.
Well, it was also a giant shoe, if I remember.
Yeah. So.
it's not a normal size shoe. It was like a house size shoe.
And then the other thing that Jack the Box kind of reminds me of, and I meant to cover this earlier, is a Divic box.
A what box?
A Divic box.
I don't know what that is.
I'm trying to remember its origins. I want to say it's Jewish. I could be wrong. So don't like hold me to that.
Yeah.
But I believe it's they're Jewish. We talked about them in an earlier episode. Whether it was this season or last season, but we did talk about Divic boxes and how if you come across one, you do not ever open it because it's a demon in a box.
Oh, the Hellraiser box too. Never open.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Jack in the Box, probably shouldn't open that either. Things in boxes.
Just don't open boxes.
Yeah.
If it comes in a bag, open it. You're good to go.
Boycott Amazon.
Yes, boycott boxes.
If it comes in boxes.
But yeah, and they would have artifacts in them that was used to help bind the demon to the box.
That's kind
of like, I think there was a personal item of the person who was affected by the demon.
Yeah,
and a few other things, and some, I want to say, Jewish writing on it.
Okay,
I don't know what their language writing is. Thank you. So it was there, but it wasn't there.
Yeah.
And they were used to contain a demon. And like I said, if you ever come across one, you're not supposed to open it up. Because if you open it up, you release the demon.
Right, and nobody
And then
wants
you have
that.
To start the ritual all over again.
Yeah.
And finding somebody to pull off a ritual like that these days...
Would you have to find somebody of Jewish origin? Like,
well, that's what I'm saying. You're going to have a hard time.
Yeah.
Finding somebody of Jewish origin who is Jewish enough to know how to do that. And then, of course, there's probably got to be a certain... Like a rabbi or somebody high up in
of like holy blood or something.
I was gonna say the religious community, Jewish religious community. So, somebody high up in there that could perform that kind of thing, just like in Christians. Mm. Catholics.
Yeah,
you have to be somebody has to be far enough up on the little chain. And be approved
the little
to
chain.
Do exorcisms.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just any Catholic priest can do an exorcism. Only certain ones that are trained in the arts can.
Yeah.
So I assume it's probably the same.
Probably, yeah.
So, with that, I think we're good to go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a fantastic episode. Had fun hanging out. I hope you all enjoyed it as well.
I hope everybody enjoyed it, barking included.
like, comment, subscribe. If you're a dog, you know, we had our dog co-host on, so
yeah,
you
yeah.
should like, subscribe.
Translating for us.
Yeah. We're so, inclusionary.
Yeah, definitely. Include yeah. everybody.
Exactly.
Why not?
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.